First, you've probably seen news stories about cases of people wrongfully convicted for crimes that other people committed. We've talked here on Central Time with people who've regained their freedom after years in prison for crimes they didn't commit. And we've heard from lawyers who work to get justice for them. Today, we're going to hear about a different kind of wrongful conviction, those in which there was actually no crime. Jessica Henry is the author of the new book, Smoke But No Fire, Convicting the Innocent of Crimes That Never Happened. She was a New York City public defender for nearly 10 years and is now an associate professor in the Department of Justice Studies at Montclair State University. Jessica, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Certainly. We have to start with this idea that some people are convicted of crimes that never actually happened. We can dig into specifics as we go along, but give us an overview of how people can be arrested for, let alone convicted, of something that didn't even happen.
When I first stumbled on this, I was as shocked as perhaps some of your listeners are. And really, there's a number of ways that this occurs, but just to give you the big picture or the scope, over one third of all people who have ever been exonerated that we know of were convicted of crimes that never happened. So this is not a small one-off phenomenon. This is something that happens with shocking frequency. And the way that it happens is varied. So it can either be a mislabeling occurs at the scene of an event. So let's say a fire burns down an apartment building and the fire person who shows up at the scene decides it was an arson when really it was an electrical fire or there was some other natural cause. Sometimes we see that in the case of a child who is found dead and they assume that it was shaken baby syndrome or some other kind of harm was committed to the child when in fact there was an undiagnosed or underlying illness that caused the baby's death. There are also cases of false accusations where people wrongly accuse folks of manufactured crimes for whatever motivation, whether it's for revenge or for financial gain or to cover up their own wrongdoing. We see that in a number of instances. Sometimes it's the police that actually plant evidence on innocent suspects, creating crimes that never occurred in the first place. So there's a whole host of triggers that can start the process of a wrongful conviction based on events that were not criminal in the first place. And then the criminal justice system kicks in and turns these non-criminal events into actual convictions where innocent people's lives are destroyed.
You make the point that this is not new. I mean, you look back to the Salem witch trials as an example.
Yes. You know, Salem witch trials is one of the earliest examples where people were executed for the crimes that they committed, allegedly for being witches and engaging in witchcraft. But probably the first known no crime wrongful conviction occurred in the case of brothers who were charged with the murder of their brother-in-law. And we find out really literally on the eve of their hanging that the brother-in-law was alive and well in New Jersey. And so they were, you know, sort of saved from the gallows at the very last minute. And this is a recurring theme where people are accused of things that just didn't occur. And then the whole sort of system comes in to prove that they were guilty.
It just seems like, I mean, you're talking about the gallows. We're hearkening back to the Salem witch trials. This feels like something that should have happened in the past, not something that should account for a third of wrongful convictions even now.
Yeah, and yet it happens today all too frequently.
Are there certain people who are more at risk for being thought of as committing a crime if the situation is unclear?
Yeah, so it depends on the nature of the crime that someone's been charged with. So one part of the book that I talk about, which is maybe less dramatic, but I think is still quite important to think about, are in the misdemeanor context. And there we see the police sort of going after poor people and people of color and prosecuting them for arresting them for low-level offenses like loitering or trespassing, when in fact, these people were doing nothing wrong at all. But upon an arrest and getting booked and, you know, being dragged into court, sometimes having to spend the night in jail, people will often plead guilty to things they did not do in order to get out and go home and get back to their children and their responsibilities, their jobs. So at the very low end, we do see lots of people, particularly poor people and people of color, who get pulled into the system for crimes that simply didn't occur.
Jessica Henry has written a book about people convicted of crimes that never happened. And we're talking about what that means and where we see this happening. We're also taking your questions for her at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about her research into this kind of exoneration of people who were convicted of crimes that didn't actually happen in the first place? Jessica, you can point to Wisconsin. There's a case from 1995 that's an example of one of the categories you talked about, those non-crime convictions, the issue of shaken baby syndrome. Tell us about Audrey Edmonds.
Yeah, so Audrey Edmonds was a stay-at-home mom. She had sort of a home daycare, and she watched children from the neighborhood. And one of her neighbors dropped off her six-month-old daughter sort of with a warning, like, oh, she seems a little fussy today, and went on her way. And shortly after that, Edmonds noticed that the baby was gasping for air, and she called 911, and the baby died later that night. And there was a misdiagnosis. The forensic pathologist determined that the baby had died from shaken baby syndrome. And shaken baby syndrome is sort of something that many people have heard of in the news. The way that it kind of works is if a baby presents with these three specific symptoms, they call it a triad. So if they find a baby that has these triad of symptoms, then it was presumed that the baby died of shaken baby syndrome and that the person who was last in the baby's care must have been the person who had done the violent shaking. So by definition, in Audrey Edmonds' case, she was the person last in the baby's care, in the baby's presence, and therefore she must have been the person who killed this infant. And, you know, at trial, the prosecution presented this evidence about shaken baby syndrome. And in her defense, Audrey Edmonds presented character witnesses who said there's just no way that Audrey Edmonds would ever have committed this kind of crime. And yet she was convicted, and she served 11 years in prison before she was finally exonerated by scientific evidence that established the baby had not died from shaken baby syndrome.
And when this happened, Audrey Edmonds from Wanakee, Wisconsin, was, pregnant with her third child. I mean, a lot happens in 11 years, and that's just all gone because of a crime that didn't ever happen.
Exactly. Her whole life was completely upended. And to your point, 11 years is an eternity for instance, in Audrey Edmonds' case, for a parent who is forcibly separated from their children, particularly for a horrible crime, right, where she becomes labeled a monster and a baby killer and, you know, all kinds of horrible names, when in fact she had done nothing wrong and the child had died from an illness or an injury that occurred accidentally or naturally and certainly not at Audrey Edmonds' hands.
We are talking with former public defender Jessica Henry about her book, Smoke with No Fire, and it's about convicting the innocent of crimes that never happened. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Is this something you've heard of before, or are you coming across this for the first time? Can you imagine how a person could be suspected of and arrested for and then convicted of a crime that wasn't actually a crime? Has something similar happened to you or somebody you know? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. We continue this conversation in a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. Thanks for joining us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Boltina. Our guest is Jessica Henry. She's a former public defender who's written a book about the fact that we convict people of crimes that never happened in the first place. I wasn't familiar with the idea until this book. Do you know about this? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Can you see how assumptions about a person could lead to the belief that they committed a crime that hadn't actually occurred? What do you think needs to be fixed in our criminal justice system? and judicial systems to prevent this from happening. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jessica, for those individuals or groups who are working on raising awareness around the issues, how important is this idea of non-existent crimes?
I think it's incredibly important because there is 100% no societal interest that supports the conviction of people for crimes that simply didn't happen. And the way that it occurs really shines a light on just how broken at every step of the process our criminal legal system is. And if we take it seriously, if we really want to understand how no crime wrongful convictions happen, we may actually be able to not only prevent their frequency, but also improve the criminal justice system as a whole.
Who are the people involved in investigating a possible crime that can send the process in the wrong direction or make it more likely that something would be treated as a crime, even if it isn't?
Well, I start the book out with one of the most heartbreaking stories that, for me, I've come across. There was a man down in Louisiana named Rodriguez Crawford, and he was wrongly convicted and sentenced to death in Louisiana for murdering his young son. And what happened was he woke up in the morning, the child had slept in his bed with him and was not moving. And when he called 911, there was just such a lack of regard for Mr. Crawford. The 911 operator made some very snide comments to the EMT driver, sort of saying, you know, well, they're acting like a fool over there. And they said, probably slept on the damn baby. And they just took their sweet time in even arriving to their home. And then when they got there, they immediately presumed that Mr. Crawford had harmed his own child. Instead of treating him like a grieving and distraught father, they treated him as a criminal suspect. They put the baby in the ambulance and waited for the police to come before they told the family that the baby, in fact, was dead. And then instead of bringing him, Mr. Crawford, to the hospital, or allowing him to stay home and mourn with his family, they brought him to the police station and interrogated him for hours about his child's death. And again, it took a really long time for his innocence to eventually be revealed after many years on death row. But race played a huge factor in the entire process, and the EMTs who arrived presumed that he had engaged in some harming his child. So they looked at the crime scene through a specific lens. They were biased in examining the baby, and you see that bias kind of creeping in through every single stage of the process, including the prosecutor, including the defense lawyers, including even, you know, the jury. It was one of those stories that when you look back on it, you think, my goodness, is this really criminal justice happening today? And it is.
We've got Justin from Milwaukee, who gave us a call at 800-642-1234, who's got a question for us. Hi, Justin.
Hi. So in Wisconsin, we have a crimeless revocation law, which means anybody who's on probation and parole, if there is an allegation that they have violated the term of their probation or parole, a warrant gets placed for them and they get returned into a prison. I am wondering what your author's opinion or thoughts are on a law like that.
Thanks for the question, Justin. And Jessica, have you looked into the idea of, you know, immediately returning people if bracelet malfunctions or if there's an accusation that they've violated parole?
Yeah, so that's not directly sort of a subject in my book, but lots and lots of people throughout this entire country are continually returned to jails and prison because of technical violations or because of accusations that have not been proven beyond a reasonable doubt, haven't been necessarily established at all. And it's a huge problem that contributes to our criminal justice population in prisons and jails. So while it may not directly pertain to what I've written about, I do know that it's a huge problem.
All right. Thanks for that question, Justin. We really appreciate it. If you've got a question for our guest, Jessica Henry, you can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Jessica's an associate professor in the Department of Justice Studies at Montclair State University. And here on Central Time, we're talking about wrongful convictions that happen without a crime actually being committed. Jessica, there are actually times when people confess to crimes that didn't happen at all. How does that work? Help us understand what happens there.
Yeah. So, you know, people, whenever I talk about this with my students, they say, I would never confess to a crime that I didn't commit. But of course, there's tremendous pressure placed on individuals to confess, particularly when there's a serious crime that's been alleged. You know, I'm thinking now about there was a 17-year-old woman, Sabrina Butler, over in Mississippi. Again, a child was found dead in his room. My book, by the way, is not only about these horrible cases involving parents with children, but these are just a couple of examples. And she was interrogated for an incredibly long time, and she confessed falsely. And she was convicted and she was sent to death row in Mississippi. She was the only woman on death row for a number of years, for about 5 or 6 years, until eventually it was established that she had done nothing wrong. And so think about that for 1 minute. There she was grieving. Her child had just died. And then she was interrogated as though she had harmed him. And there's only, it's not that shocking that at some point you break. And the other thing that happens a lot or frequently is that people plead guilty to crimes they didn't commit. That's also in some ways a wrongful admission in the sense that they're admitting guilt to things that didn't happen. And they do that for a whole host of reasons that have nothing to do with innocence or guilt. It has to do with practical determinations. And here I'm thinking about Tulia, Texas, which is quite famous. Down in Tulia, Texas, there was a law enforcement officer who was brought in to clean up a drug problem that most folks didn't even know Tulia, Texas had. He wound up arresting about 10% of the Black population in Tulia. And the only evidence against them that there was a lot of drugs there was his say-so. There were no lab tests. There was no reports. There was no contemporaneous notes. And after the first few folks went to trial and lost and were sentenced to such long prison terms that your jaw would be on the floor, the rest of the 40-something defendants pled guilty to crimes that never happened. He had manufactured this whole drug problem in the first place. And people plead guilty in part because they're afraid of the consequences if they don't.
Right. It could be worse if you don't plead guilty. Other people haven't won, so you might as well give up and take what's lesser when it comes to punishment.
Yes.
Even when you know it's wrong.
Right. You know, you could be facing 25 years if you go to trial, or 50 years, and someone's offering you a plea to probation or 2 years in prison or whatever. You take that plea because the alternative could be so much worse. Yeah. And in the Tulia cases, all 48 defendants were ultimately exonerated. There had been no wrongdoing at all. No crimes had ever been committed.
Gil from Milwaukee wants to talk with us. Hi, Gil.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm just calling regarding, let's see, somebody's charging the innocent person. Is our system make them liable? Those are responsible for charging somebody innocent?
Thanks for the question, Gil. We appreciate it. Jessica, does anything happen to people who manufacture these situations or make the wrong decisions and charge when a crime hasn't happened?
Gil, the short answer is no. and I'm not laughing because it's funny. It's just no. Police and prosecutors both have immunity. What your listeners may not know is that prosecutors have absolute immunity for misconduct that they commit in the course of acting as prosecutors. And what that means is they are 100% insulated from being held liable for their wrongdoings. Police are held to a slightly different standard, qualified immunity, but the way that courts have interpreted qualified immunity makes it really hard to hold the police responsible for their wrongdoing. And so most of the time, actors who are involved in these wrongful convictions are not held accountable. Even in cases where it's a civilian who's bringing a false accusation, we rarely see anyone going back and bringing perjury charges against them, even though their lies are what resulted in an innocent person serving time in prison or being convicted of a crime they didn't commit.
So then what happens to people after they've spent time in prison, after being convicted of a crime that didn't happen, and then they were later cleared?
So unfortunately, it depends on what state you're in. There are still numerous states that do not have compensation statutes or who make it really hard for the innocent and exonerated to ever receive compensation at all. And they oftentimes, you know, come back into a world that doesn't necessarily know that they've been exonerated. They just know that they went to prison for a long time and now they're out. And there's a real problem with having innocent people reintegrate into society. It's really challenging for them. They, particularly those who spent many years in prison, there's a huge gap in their life resume. And having to pick up the pieces and start all over is incredibly difficult. And there are not that many programs out there to help the wrongly convicted. Someone once said this to me, and it's kind of ironic. If you are convicted of a crime and released, you may be able to receive some level of services through parole and probation. And I don't want to overstate the quality of those programs, but they exist. If you're innocent, you're not eligible because you're not on parole or probation. You've done nothing wrong and you should never have been in prison in the first place. And you certainly aren't under supervision after your release. And so there's
so
this
qualify.
Kind of void. There's a void that people who are exonerated live in.
Jessica, you've given us so much to think about. We really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Jessica Henry was a New York City public defender for nearly 10 years and is now an associate professor in the Department of Justice Studies at Montclair State University. Her new book is called Smoke But No Fire: Convicting the Innocent of Crimes That Never Happened.